team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Oh, welcome in, everybody. That's right. Tony Mack and the Triplett right here on a really interesting, distressing Saturday, to be honest with you guys, here on Tony Mack and the Triplett. We have a great show for you today leading up to kickoff, including two top 10 teams, Aaron. Two top 10 teams last night go down on a really weird Friday night in the college football world, both double-digit favorites. Clemson went on the road into the Carrier Dome and took on the 3-3 Syracuse Orange. Clemson's quarterback Kelly Bryant went down just before the half with a concussion, would not return, but don't take the easy way out on this one. Aaron, did you watch the game? Because if you did, you know where I'm going with this.
I actually didn't have a chance to watch the game. But I did see some good highlights of it. And, you know, I think it was one of those classic cases of a team looking ahead, because that's clearly what Clemson was doing. And they got in trouble with a little bit of this last year when they kind of started sleepwalking through a couple games. They sleepwalk against NC State last year, barely got by that one. And then the very next week they went down at home to Pittsburgh. So it kind of happened again this year. Last week they looked a little bit sleepy against it was Wake Forest. Last weekend, or was it Boston College? It was one of those two, and they didn't look great in that game. And then this week, of course, going down against Syracuse, and I mean, going on the road on a weeknight is a tough thing to do for any top team, especially when you're looking ahead past what isn't a great Syracuse team. But hats off to Syracuse. They played really well. I think Dino Babers has a good thing going on there. I talked a little bit about him in our group text earlier this morning, how Syracuse is a great fit, but just about anywhere else, I'm not, you know, on his bandwagon. But he has a good thing going there. And then Washington State laying the biggest egg I think we've seen all season against Cal. Yeah, it was on the road, but they got embarrassed.
Yeah.
They got absolutely embarrassed.
And I'll go into that because me and your brother stayed up and watched that game last night.
That's a little bit too late for me.
But the point I want to make here is I don't want people taking the easy way out when they think about that Clemson game. Well, Clemson only lost because Kelly Bryant didn't play in the second half. You look at the score, 27-24. Clemson wins that game if Kelly Bryant plays the second half. I'm not denying that, but I'm telling you that Syracuse didn't have that lead because Kelly Bryant was out. While Kelly Bryant was in the game, Clemson needed a scoop and score from their defense just to tie it at 14 in the first half. Syracuse defense keeping Clemson on their toes, and their offense dominating a defense that many, as including myself, saw as one of the best, if not the best, in college football. And they go on the road to the Carrier Dome and get dominated. Dominated. Syracuse piled up almost 300 yards of offense in the first half while Kelly Bryant was in there. So it's not like Clemson's offensive woes is what sparked Syracuse's offense. No, while the offense was at full blast with Kelly Bryant back there, they were still struggling, and Syracuse was taking advantage on both sides of the ball. Clemson's talent was enough to keep them in that football game and keep it almost tied at the half. Syracuse goes down, kicks a field goal before the half, 17-14. And then after that, Clemson scores 10 points, and so does Syracuse. Syracuse matches that 10 points in the second half, and they win by three. And the story here is Clemson's defense. Probably the best defense that, in a lot of people's eyes, in the country, that had 11 sacks against Auburn. This once daunting defense gave up 440 yards to Syracuse. And don't get me wrong. You know, I had to do stats and everything. I'm like, how good is this Syracuse offense? I had to check all that stuff out. Syracuse, as far as actual yards, not yards a game, yards, they're third in the country as far as yards gained total. Yards per game, they're okay. I mean, they put up about 460-something yards a game. Clemson held them under that. But Clemson's defense doesn't give up 400 yards a game. Now, I'm with you. I think they went in there looking ahead, but this has to hurt them in some capacity. I can't see them dropping nearly – I can't see them dropping farther than what Oklahoma dropped. Oklahoma dropped from 3 to 12. I see around the same thing happening for Clemson because of Washington State. I don't know, and depending on what happens the rest of the day, I'm assuming Clemson might drop. I don't know if they'll keep them out of the top 10 because of how close the game was. But the team that's got to go – the team that's in the top 10 that lost last night, that you alluded to, that has to make a big-time drop, they have to drop somewhere to 17 or 18, is absolutely Washington State. Because as I mentioned, you can look at that Clemson game and say, well, Kelly Bryant wasn't in there. Or if they have Kelly Bryant, no matter how bad they played, no matter how bad that defense played, they could have won that game.
And Clemson, and Kelly Bryant was banged up coming into this game. He hadn't been himself for the last couple weeks, and so this just kind of put it over the top. And like I said, I believe they, you know, kind of sleptwalked through this game, and you're right, their talent was enough to keep them in this game, and just they didn't come to play. They weren't ready to play, and neither was Washington State. But if you don't put up even if you're not ready to play, you have to put up a better fight against Cal, a team who doesn't know what defense is. And you put up the least amount of points in the Mike Leach era at Washington State, 3. You mustered 3 points. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the two things that Mike Leach couldn't find last night, where the sandwich stuff is, as he alluded to in his press conference, and the end zone. Now, I want to get into that game. We're definitely going to get into that game right now. But first, let me tell you how you can get in on the show. You can start by calling 866-485-9867 to get in here and talk with me and Aaron. React to what you saw last night. Put someone on notice today. Is there a top 10 team? Is there a top 25 team? Since we don't have any top 25 on top 25 matchups, is there a team on upset alert? Who is it? Let us know. 866-485-9867 to weigh in here. Or you can tweet at Tony Mac Triplett, at Tony Mac Triplett. Get on there, and you can look in the description, find my Twitter, at Tony Mac UMP, and Aaron's Twitter, at ATripTennis. Let us know what you think, because I'm about to let you know about this Washington State game last night. Man, I had to take a break after the Clemson game, and I wanted to let that Washington State game get started a little bit. I didn't watch it from start to finish. I watched the second half all the way until the end, and I was just score-checking, to be honest with you, at first. Me and your brother were hanging out, and the fiance just went to bed, and we were score-checking. I just turned off a video game, and I flipped it back over to the television, and at 11:18 p.m., the TV was going nuts because Cal had just scored a touchdown right before the half. 11:18 was halftime. Game didn't end until a little after 1 o'clock. And, oh my gosh, Aaron, if you could have seen this game. Washington State, they go to Cal. They made the trip. That's about the only thing that they did right last night. 7 turnovers for the Cougars, including 5 picks, 5 interceptions from Luke Fault. This was the wacky game of the night. I've never seen momentum for another team be the sole reason that another team performed so poorly. It was just clear that the momentum for Cal caused and just sucked the life out of Washington State, because Cal didn't look great. Cal didn't do anything spectacular. Those turnovers, they didn't play great defense to go get those turnovers. One was a wacky shovel pass that just bounced off a guy, and a defensive lineman jumps up and picks it. Another one bounced off, it deflected like 6 or 7 times off of 4 different players, including one of the offense. It was just a ridiculously weird night. And I looked at your brother right there. Your brother had said, Kevin, he says, Washington State, the only way to get back in this with about 5 minutes to go is a couple scooping scores. And in my head, I almost said it out loud, but I was like, well, a scooping score is about the only way Cal hasn't scored tonight. 3 plays later, Cal scores on a scooping score. And it was just so many, like, close plays where did the ball touch the ground? Was that really a fumble? And it was so close, but every single time, it was obvious that the call was correct, and it just happened to go in Cal's favor. All of these 50-50 plays could have gone either way, but they just happened to go Cal's way last night. And Luke Fogg looked awful. He had a hand injury. I think it was on his non-throwing hand. Don't know why he continued to stay in the game after they were getting blown out. But the best part about this game, the touchdown of the year happened last night. We watched this live. Your brother and I stood up, put our hands on our heads, reacted in a big way. Ross Bowers, Cal's quarterback, takes a snap, has to take off into the end zone, and he's trying to jump and hurdle into the end zone and score because he's about to meet a couple of big uglies at the line, and he's going to get smacked. He jumps up, and He's trying to go over the line. I don't think he's trying to flip on purpose. And he gets hit twice, and it causes him to do a front flip that he almost lands had he not landed on a Washington State football player. It was the most athletic play he'll ever make in his entire life, and you at least got to see that, right?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive, and I saw that. Like I said, I watched highlights of both games this morning, and you're right about, you know, kind of everything going wrong for Washington State. You know, it was just like, what do they call it, Murphy's Law? Anything that can possibly go wrong will go wrong, and it did. Nothing. It was one, and it's one of those games where you got this feeling, just, and like I said, I was just watching the highlights, but got this feeling that, you know, nothing's going to go our way tonight, regardless of what we do. And I did get to see that play, and it was an exciting-looking play. But Washington State got humbled last night completely. And both Clemson and Washington State have some soul-searching and some rethinking to do before they get ready to go out and play next week, and especially Clemson, I think. And it leaves a lot of Clemson fans devastated at this point, not really knowing what to do, because Clemson fans, I think, starting to feel a little bit like Alabama fans. You know, what happens when we get beat? You know, this shouldn't happen. And Alabama fans are breathing a sigh of relief right now, seeing that Clemson looked human for once. But because, you know, I read an article last week that had to do with it was a prediction for the, because, you know, half the season's over. We've had 6 weeks going on for the 12 games. And it was, you know, predicting the next half of the season. And I read it all the way through. And, you know, we talked last week how this unpredictability is kind of hurting college football. And that's exactly what this was. The article went, I mean, I know that Syracuse has changed that a little bit, but Clemson lost once last year, too, to an unranked Pittsburgh team at home. And they didn't look very good doing it. It looked like they couldn't play defense. And all they did for the rest of the season was come out and play good defense in the national championship game. So if Clemson gets healthy and they fix, you know, if they make the adjustments they did last year, like I think they will, they should be fine. They got a tough stretch coming up, and they're probably going to have Miami in the championship game. But assuming they get all their problems fixed, this article basically was everything as a college football fan. If you want parity, you did not want to read, because basically this was, you know, as predictable as it gets. They had Auburn go. They had Alabama going unbeaten. They were untested. They had, when they played Auburn, they said Auburn's going to look like they did against Clemson, get handled. Alabama, if they're tested at all, is going to be against Georgia, which they're going to beat. They had Clemson. They had Ohio State rebounding and going to the playoff, and they had USC rebounding and going to the playoff, and they had Alabama beating, I think it was Ohio State. And either way, it had Alabama and Clemson rematching and Alabama winning. And really, there was not a single bold prediction in the entire prediction for the rest of the season. And it had the Big 12 getting left out, that despite being the most competitive, well-rounded league that we have, and with some of the best offenses that we have, they're not going to be able to get a two-loss team in the playoff, because, you know, they're just going to kind of beat up on each other, because it's probably, while being not a great league, but a...
Who's the two-loss team?
No, they said that Oklahoma, or not Oklahoma, they said the Big 12 won't get a team in the playoff, because they're going to have, the winner of the league's going to have two losses.
Who's going to have two losses?
I think they had Oklahoma losing again.
I disagree with that. I don't think Oklahoma loses another game and wins the Big 12. I don't think that's possible. Mainly because that'll be their second loss will also be a conference loss. TCU is still undefeated in the conference. West Virginia only has one conference loss so far. And I don't see that being the case. And if Oklahoma goes into the championship with two Big 12 losses, I don't know if they'll win that game. But I have confidence in either TCU's only loss of the season will beat Oklahoma and they'll upset them in the Big 12 championship game, or Oklahoma will be a one-loss team running the rest of the way with an impressive schedule. They'll have to take on a ranked TCU team, go on the road to Bedlam, take on a ranked Oklahoma State team. West Virginia will be a tricky game. They have to take on the Longhorns today, which is no gimme game, which if you win that game, no matter what Texas is ranked or what their record is, you get credit for it, because that's a gritty rivalry game. So if they do that and then they have to play the second-best team again in the league, I think they have a pretty good shot at making it. And if they get left out, that's fine. But them saying that it's going to be a two-loss team coming out of the Big 12, I think you're wrong.
And I want to say that's what I read. It's been several days, but I do think that's what it said. And I was actually talking the other day, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, if I could pick four teams that realistically, but yet optimistically, could still win out, win their leagues, and go to the playoff for the parity of college football and for something fun to see on the field. I mean, having Auburn, Miami, TCU, and I think I said Penn State, even though I don't particularly care for Penn State, it would be different. And, you know, that would be cool to see, you know, something like that, some kind of with some difference. But everybody knows that's not going to happen. We're going to have four teams that everybody has seen. We might have one new team in the playoff this year, but I really don't know who that would be.
Well, while we're talking about playoff parity, how concerning last night as far as a competitive playoff goes, even if there's only four like great teams that make the playoff, even then, after watching last night and seeing how every team other than Alabama struggles, how concerning is it that we're going to have this really uncompetitive football season, get into a playoff, and not have a competitive playoff? Is that a realistic concern? Because it is for me.
Well, it happened last year. I mean, we had
but we did have a good championship.
Had a good championship game, which was, in my opinion, I've said it before on here, the second best football game we've seen since the turn of the century, behind USC and Texas back in 2005. But last year, in the semifinal games, the combined score was 55-7. 55-7. And in the year before that, Clemson beat Oklahoma. It wasn't, they didn't blow them out, but they pulled away in the second half.
Yeah, it was a 1-point game at halftime.
And but Alabama just ran through Michigan State like everybody knew that they would.
Yeah. But personally for me, the semifinals, I'm okay if they're like that. I personally, of course, you want more competitive football, but I'm okay with it if they're blowouts and you're sifting through the garbage again and you get the two best teams, and the championship game is a great game. For me, that's all worth it. I know that's probably an unpopular opinion, but that's all worth it to me. I'm just not sure for what I'm seeing right now, we'll get a competitive championship football game.
Of course, you might could have said that last year with Clemson losing to Pittsburgh and Alabama running. Alabama ran through everybody last season. Yeah. They had that one. I think they had one single digit football game in the regular season that was Ole Miss, and Ole Miss scored late to make it look that way after being up, of course, like, what was it, 21-3 or something. But and then they got to the championship game, of course, in Clemson. But, that, I mean, Clemson had a once-in-a-generation or once-in-a-decade kind of player, because you hadn't seen a player like Watson since Cam, and you hadn't seen a player like since Vince Young. So, I mean, you have those three guys stand out to me, and it took that kind of player to beat Alabama on the big stage.
That's my point. That I know Clemson kind of resembles what happened last year, and they kind of showed up after a loss, after sleepwalking, but they don't have that kind of player. And they definitely have playmakers, and I'm not saying Kelly Bryant's awful. One, he's got to get healthy. And number two, even then, he's never been in that position before. It took Deshaun Watson to lose the year before in the championship game to get there, but at least that championship game was a very good competitive game as well.
But at the same time, Ohio State several years ago beat Alabama in the semifinals with a third-string quarterback. So it can be done, but of course that takes a great coach and a great overall. That was a great team.
But who decided that game? It wasn't the third string quarterback. It was the incredible star running back who's dominating the NFL right now. Well, maybe not right now, but last year's a rookie, Ezekiel Elliott. You don't have that player behind Kelly Bryant either.
No, but Alabama hadn't been run on that season by anybody. Well, Auburn. Auburn was the only team that really ran on Alabama that year. Auburn put up. That Iron Bowl irritates me almost more than any, because Auburn, if they hadn't had Swiss cheese defense, which 2014 Auburn, if you're an Auburn fan, you remember that defense couldn't stop anybody. But they put up 650 yards of offense on Alabama and put up 44 points and got beat by 11.
While we're talking about this, while we're talking about the parity and how top 10 teams are falling now, let's look ahead real quick. It can be tonight, it could be today, or it could be future weeks, because I have a team in mind as we're talking about this. Is there another top 5, maybe top 10 team that should be put on notice looking at their schedule or looking at a certain game they have coming up, maybe their schedule as a whole? Maybe you think they're a pretender. What top 5, top 10 team do you think is going to get dealt with in the next few weeks and kind of get sifted out as we're trying to figure out who the real guys are and who the pretenders are?
Well, one of them I think is Penn State, because I think they're going to lose to They're going to lose to Ohio State. And I think they're – I mean, Michigan got beat by Michigan State, which we all didn't expect, but it was classic D'Antonio. On the road, defense, you know, nobody expected them to win. And I when I picked them to beat Notre Dame a few weeks ago, of course, I lost the pick, but I said this
Yeah, you did.
I know I did, but
– that was my 6-0 week.
But I called, you know, D'Antonio going on the road, winning a big game. I called it. It just came a few weeks early because it happened last weekend. And he always does that one, wins that one game to stick around. But I think Michigan's going to give Penn State problems because Michigan plays great defense. And I think they get Penn State at home this year, I believe. And, wait, is it on the road?
Penn State gets Michigan at home.
Okay, because I thought Michigan blew out Penn State on the road last year, but it was – okay, so it was at home. So it'll be a little tougher for sure. But I think – oh, because Penn State has to go to Columbus to play Ohio State, and I honestly don't think that there's any way they come out of there with a win.
I don't think Michigan's going to win a big game in their conference until they develop a quarterback. Jim Harbaugh hadn't done that. But I'm glad you brought up Penn State because that was the team I was going to bring up. I understand that they've got some tough games on the schedule, but do you know how they're aligned? Do you know how those games are arranged? Penn State has a bye week this week. Penn State does not play this week. After the bye week, they have Michigan. It's at Penn State, at Ohio State, at Michigan State. Back to back.
And
there's
no
way they come out of that unscathed.
I said preseason that they're going to lose two or three of those games.
See,
I'm still sticking with that they're going to lose two of the three. And they might beat Michigan.
I think they lose one of those games.
Are they going to Michigan State?
Yes.
They definitely might lose that game.
It's at home against Michigan, on the road at Ohio State, on the road at Michigan State, back to back to back. And I think they beat Michigan in a revenge game. Michigan kicked the crap out of them last year.
I think they serve. I would say that's a good prediction, but I think they just survived that game. I could see that game. Like, Michigan's going to show up and play some defense.
Sure.
I think they're going to make McSorley beat them because they're not going to let Barkley beat them because they play great defense.
The problem is, Barkley's going to get the ball on other sides of the ball, or other sides of the game other than the offense in the backfield. One, they're going to try to throw to him, but also he is a return man. Containing him is a lot more difficult because you don't just see him in the backfield. You see him on other sides of the ball.
Penn State's trying to turn him into what Stanford did to McCaffrey, yeah. Basically letting him do everything.
Oklahoma used to do that with Adrian Peterson back in the day, but until he got hurt and you started seeing star players like that go down and really, you know, shorten their college football and NFL lifespan, they kind of cut that out. But Penn State, you're right, they do continue that tradition. But I think they beat Michigan next week. I think Ohio State destroys them. It's at the Shoe. Ohio State's been on an absolute tear since they lost to Oklahoma. They probably look like the next best team in the country right now, but their schedule has been kind of weak. They're about to beat the doors off of Nebraska today. And then they go to Michigan State. Michigan State, to me, is kind of the same as Michigan. They're like a great value version of Michigan right now. They play some pretty good defense, not as good defense as Michigan does. Don't have that good of an offense either. So I think Penn State's more of a complete team. I think they get out of that with one loss, and it's going to keep the conversation alive where you're going to get a Big Ten team in regardless. With Penn State's one loss, if Ohio State happens to slip up again somewhere down the road, Penn State will jump up and take that position, win the Big Ten again.
But see, Ohio State's only loss is Oklahoma. If they beat Penn State, and they can still lose a Big Ten game and still go to the championship game.
That would be crazy. A two-loss Ohio State Big Ten champion keeping a one-loss Penn State team out of it again would certainly keep Penn State out of the playoff.
I guarantee you that the committee would pick Ohio State over Penn State, even if Ohio State had two losses and a championship, because that's exactly what Penn State did last year and got left out. But at the same time, this is Ohio State we're talking about, and this is where bias can come in, and they try to say that the committee's unbiased, but you know that they're trying to think, what can we do to get the best playoff matchups that we can get for, you know, because I mean it's a business when you get right down to it, at the rudimentary level, and you hate that about college football or really any college sport, and you're seeing that with all this basketball stuff coming out. It's a business at the root of it, and they're going to pick what they think's best for the playoff matchups. And I think a two loss Big Ten champ Ohio State gets in over one loss Penn State with head to head and 100%, championship, 100%.
100%, because
and it's weird. We said that same thing happened last year with Penn State, but we both said you got to take Ohio State. Like, it's like,
right. And well, it has to do with brand recognition. It does. I think. And Penn State, as you mentioned, you said it's a no-brainer that Ohio State with head-to-head over Penn State and Big Ten Championship gets in. Penn State had those things over Ohio State
yeah,
last
exactly.
year and still didn't get mm-hmm. in. So,
and Penn State is not
you can't tell me it's not
an
brand
unknown brand, but it's a lot like it. They haven't been one in a long time.
Right, exactly. Well, coming up here later in the show, Aaron, you and I will recap last week's picks, update the standings on our Pick'em Challenge. We'll make our picks for this week. Not an eye-popping selection of games on the surface, but after last night, expect nothing and be ready for anything. Coming up next, we're going to get our Crying Jordan Faces of the Week in here as well. And also, because we ran out of time just now, Aaron is going to give us, we're going to go to the polls, and Aaron is going to give us the Aaron Triplett Shirt of the Week. All of that next, right here on Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump. Triplet, that is right. Now, everybody, I don't know if you're aware of what week it is. I'm not sure. I know it's what, week seven. That's not what I mean, all right? 866-485-9867 is how you get in. At Tony Mack Triplet, at Tony Mack UMP, at A Trip Tennis is how you get at us on Twitter. Now, like I was saying, I don't know. I'm sure you know what week it is, especially if you listen to the Tom Abraham Show. You know who my squeeze is. You know who I root for. You should know who Aaron's an Auburn fan. I'm an Oklahoma fan. So you know damn well that it's Oklahoma-Texas week. All right? It's the Red River, whatever the hell you want to call it now, rivalry, shootout, showdown. It's that week. And with that in mind, we're going to go to the football polls, Aaron. We're going to go to the T-shirt polls and tell us what the people decided with the Aaron Triplett Shirt of the Week.
Well, going to the polls, you know, I posted, I asked you actually, I was like, should we do an Oklahoma-Texas poll? And he was like, yeah, you said definitely. So I went ahead and I posted Oklahoma-Texas, hashtag Red River Rivalry, and it popped up. And, you know, normally we get about 8 or 9 votes. Like, we just get 8 or 9 votes. I vote once with my personal Twitter, which one I want to wear. But then I just kind of leave it up. And typically, like I said, 8 or 9. We got 19 votes this week, which is going to be hard to beat for the future. But Texas took it home. And so I am currently wearing...
I'm vomiting, by the way, in my mouth a little bit.
A University of Texas shirt. Yeah, it was 68% of the vote to 32% of the vote. And then the Texas shirt, you can check it out on Twitter. It's got the little longhorn. And we are actually, this is what, and see, I've actually got 2 Texas shirts at the house. This one with the longhorn on it and another one that has just the word Texas and the school seal on it, which is more my size. It's a large. This one I'm wearing, of course, is a small. And I told you this before the show. We're in the middle of these team shirts that I've worn for the past few weeks. We're right in the middle of what I have started to call the small series of shirts, because I've got several shirts that are adult smalls from way back in the day that barely fit me, but they still fit me. So I'm going to enjoy them while I can. But, of course, Penn State last week and this week Texas in the small series of shirts. Stanford that I wore several weeks ago, small series. So, but Texas team shirt of the week, and I actually tweeted with a hashtag Hook'em on the Tony Mack and the Triplett website. And now, give you the little horns over here, and I'm not really, I'm not a Texas fan, but I'm just giving Antonio a hard time.
You're watching this game with me today.
I will
be at my house.
I am,
and you will watch me have a heart attack during this entire football. That's the glory of this game. Like,
and I just want to see a good competitive football game, because this game is usually just good and competitive, and it's fun to watch at the old Cotton Bowl. It's nice to see the Oklahoma, the Texas, the uniform, just everything about it is aesthetically pleasing.
That's the glory about this game. It hurt. Like, you during the game, you don't know the outcome, obviously, and you're having a heart attack, even more so than any other game. You're pouring everything you have as a fan, screaming, predicting plays, calling people stupid. Great play call. You're dumb. Fire Mike Stoops, which is what you'll hear me say that a million times today. But the payoff It's great if you win because you get this great sigh of relief. All of that heartache, all of that screaming, it just encourages you to do it again. It makes you want to be that fan where you just scream all the time when everything's going your way. You scream and enjoy. Now, I had to respond, Aaron. There's no way I could let you. I knew that Texas was going to win this poll before you even put it up, before you even suggested it. I said, I've known for 3 weeks that during this week, you were going to wear a Texas shirt. I knew that was going. There was nothing going to keep you from wearing a Texas shirt.
I've actually tried to get Texas on the show several times. I think it's been the most popular shirt on my poll. I think I've had it up 3 times. This was the third one, so it'll be retired for a while.
So
but
I had to respond. I couldn't let you get away with it. So if you go check Twitter at Tony Mac Triplett, at Tony Mac UMP, this week and this week only, Tony Mac has a shirt of the week as well. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I wear an Oklahoma shirt and Oklahoma jersey in here every single Saturday. But I responded myself with an Oklahoma shirt of the week. The Tony Mac special shirt of the week. Beat Texas, baby. That's right. Beat Texas. Texas is upside down because, you know, that's the right way a Longhorn is supposed to be. Horns down. I got a response for you, Aaron. And unlike yourself, I know you're not going to wear that shirt all the way through the game today. You've probably got an Auburn shirt to change into. This bad boy right here is not coming off. I'm not coming off of this thing. So I'm ready for the game. I've been ready for this game for a while. And in terms of the entire season, I'm not excited that Oklahoma lost to Iowa State, obviously. But in terms of this game, with this game following the Iowa State game, I'm kind of happy for 1 week that Oklahoma lost that game because it's a little bit of a wake-up call. Ever since the Ohio State game, they go play Tulane. They don't look good against Tulane. Tulane hangs with them in the first half. They play Baylor. They look awful against Baylor. They blow 2 14-point leads to Baylor, almost lose that game. They get a bye week, and they play Iowa State. Iowa State comes from behind and scores. This is an Oklahoma team that was conditioned all offseason as the underdog. People are counting us out because of that Ohio State game on our schedule. They don't think we have a chance. So they play with a chip on their shoulder. They go into the Shoe and they beat Ohio State. Well, the problem with that is now you're 2-0 and you're not going to be the underdog the rest of the season. You're favored to win your conference by a long shot. So now you have to do the Ohio State thing. You have to play with the target on your back. You have to take everybody's best shot for the rest of the season because of the number, because of the OU on your jersey and the number by that brand being the number 3 team in the country. You have to be, you're going to take everybody's best shot. Everybody's coming at you with everything they have, and they did not respond well against Tulane. They did not respond well by a long shot against Baylor, and they did not respond well against Iowa State. So that loss going into this Texas game, a game that it doesn't matter what Texas is ranked, you will get credit for winning. I'm glad they lost for 1 week. I'm glad because they will be ready for this game. And I feared that if they somehow pulled that game out against Iowa State, not only would they lose to Texas, they would look it would be an embarrassment to watch, and Texas would win by double digits. Now, I think it's going to be a close game. I almost started giving away my pick. I'm not going to do that because I'm a professional. But I think it's going to be a very good game. And then, like I said, for 1 week, I'm okay with the loss because I think it's going to get them ready to play. Now, because of this game, I know I'm talking a lot, Aaron. It's because I got a great question for you. Because of this game is traditionally every single year at the Cotton Bowl. Every year. By the way, full disclosure, I've been tweeting about this game all week. Thursday, this Big 12 Twitter, where they're trying to, you know, be accredited and do their whole for fans, by fans kind of deal, they liked a couple of my tweets. So I went and I checked them out. And they had posted everything you need to know for the Oklahoma-Texas game. And it's got, you know, history. It's got last year's score stats and all this. And it's pretty cool. But I couldn't get over what was at the very top. I couldn't do it. The very top was location of the game. Now, if you're writing for the Big 12 and you're supposed to be a Big 12 fan for Big 12 fans, you got to know where this game is. They said this game was in Austin, Texas. They said this game was at Texas. Has this game ever been at Texas since we've been alive? No, it's always been at the Cotton Bowl. That's my question. They ended up going back and changing it, by the way. I retweeted him, and I was like, hey, not to be a stickler here, but that game's never been there. But that plays right into my question, Aaron. I'm biased because of this game, because of everything this game means. But for all rivalries around the country, what's better? Do you like the home and home? Now, I will say, as far as non-conference matchups go at the beginning of the season, I would prefer those be home and home rather than neutral site. But as far as rivalry games go, they get played every year. Like the Oklahoma game, literally split right down the middle. You half the stadium sells for Oklahoma, half the stadium sells for Texas. It's a beautiful sight if you watch it. You will see half crimson and cream, half burnt orange. It's beautiful. What's better, home and home for a rivalry, or that legit every single year neutral site split directly down the middle with the state fair going on outside? Because if it's like that every year, like Oklahoma, Texas is, you get traditions like that. What's better? I mean, can you choose?
I think you can choose, because that's what I'm. There's certain games that I like having the feel of a neutral site. There's some that I like where it's home and home. And like you brought up at the beginning, you wish that some of the more of those out of conference games were home and homes. And I can agree with that. I was all on board with that a couple years ago, but now I've started to kind of like the feel of a neutral site game early in the season. Auburn and Clemson, of course, they seem to play all the time out of conference. They'll do like a home and away, and then they'll play in Atlanta. They've done that before. But I don't care either way. Yeah. with the early season matchups go. But as far as rivalries, I think it just depends on the game. Because it's part of it.
Yeah, I guess I should ask it a little better, because all of a sudden, if they started doing the Iron Bowl and neutral site again, it'd be a little different. I know sometimes the games can be out of place, but I mean, like, as far as tradition, I guess what I should ask is, if I were to ask you what the better rivalry is, the Iron Bowl or the Red River Showdown, I know what you're going to pick, but what I'm saying is, does location factor into you picking that? Which rivalry is better?
I think so. I think that it because, see, you have those huge rivalries. You have, I mean, Ohio State and Michigan and Auburn and Alabama, they play, you know, home and home. Those games would lose a little something if they played neutral site, I feel like. I mean, if Auburn, I mean, God forbid the Iron Bowl go back to Birmingham. Nobody wants to play there anymore. But I think it might be, I mean, if there was a better place to play there, I think playing there once every now and again would be, you know, okay.
To that same token you're talking about, the home and home deal, I think that for 1 year, or I guess 2 years, if Oklahoma, the neutral side, if you go watch this game, it's beautiful how it's split right down the middle. But for one series, if you did a home and home with Texas and Oklahoma, I think that the Oklahoma crowd would be incredible. But I think that if going into Texas, if Oklahoma had to go to Austin, Texas to play Texas, I don't think in our generation we will ever see a greater crowd if that were ever to happen. And if Oklahoma were to win that game, I don't think Oklahoma would survive. I don't think they would go into Austin and win a game. What I mean is, if they won that game, I don't think they would literally survive. I think they would be dead in the locker room, because that would be one of the most hostile environments we've ever seen in our entire lifetime.
And like you said, it takes something, or what I was saying is, it takes something away from it, and it might be good. Like, for example, when the first time ever that Alabama came to play Auburn in 1989, the very first time, I'm pretty sure that Auburn packed about 92,000 fans in an 85,000 seat stadium, and that was a record until, you know, like just a few years ago, it was an attendance record, and it was one of those games that was like, Pat Dye said it was like tearing down the Berlin Wall and all this stuff. And that added something extra to that rivalry. Of course, Auburn won that game, and they've stopped playing in Birmingham, which I think is good. And there's something about an Auburn and Iron Bowl when, like in 2010, when Cam had to go to Bryant-Denny, and then in 2013 when the kick six happened at Jordan-Hare. You know, those kind of things are good for that rivalry. Same thing for Michigan and Ohio State and things like that. But with Oklahoma and Texas playing there's three games that come to mind specifically when you're thinking about neutral site rivalry games. One of them is Oklahoma and Texas, because like you said, you got the state fair going on, all these festivities that happen that adds something to it, the way the stadium looks. And they play at the old Cotton Bowl, which they don't play, there's no lights there, so they play it during the day. And then you have the other one is Florida and Georgia playing in Jacksonville. You know, that's like a huge party, basically, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, Florida-Georgia game, Jacksonville, right on the line, the state line, or close.
So compare those. Which is the better rivalry?
I mean, Oklahoma and Texas is the better rivalry there because those are the two. I would put Oklahoma and Texas on my list of the five biggest rivalries in football.
I think they just do the neutral site thing better than Florida and Georgia. I'm just going to be honest.
But there's one team. There's one game that I think that does neutral site better than Oklahoma and Texas, and it's Army and Navy. They're the other game that I think on the level of history and just tradition. And see, the Army-Navy game is extremely different because there's – I mean, they don't like each other. I mean, it's go Navy beat Army, go Army beat Navy kind of thing. But there's so much, like, mutual respect there, and it's just all the pageantry involved in that game is very, like – I don't know, it's different, and it's awesome to watch on television the way they do it in Philadelphia. Of course, it's been in different places before. It's been in Baltimore before. I think it's been in D.C. before. But
okay.
Playing that game at Army, that would really hurt that game more than anything.
I think it's a great game. And it's one of those you have to watch every year. But here's my question. That takes place after the college football season, essentially, every year. If that game were today with Oklahoma and Texas, what would the nation watch?
The Oklahoma and Texas.
Absolutely. That's why the Oklahoma-Texas rivalry is better, and that's why they do neutral site better.
I think that Army-Navy does neutral site better. I'm not going to say it's a bigger rivalry. I don't know. See, I'm one of those people that really enjoys the Army-Navy game, and a lot of people don't. Your average college football fans won't, but I enjoy the Army-Navy game, and I would put the Army-Navy game in my top five list of biggest rivalries in college football.
We'll have to make that list before the season's over with. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we didn't get our Cry and Jordan faces in. We're going to try to squeeze those in. If we can't, we'll put them in at the top of the hour before we go over our picks. None of that happens without a break right here. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 at the Ump. Tony Mack and the Triplet on this fantastic Saturday. Well, it was a stressful Saturday a little concerning with all the upsets, but now it's turning out to be a pretty great Saturday. I'm ready for this slate of games, and I'm also ready. We've only got a few minutes, Aaron, so I'm going to fire up this music, and you're going to get yours in for us real quick, all right? You know what? You'll know what time it is. You'll know what time it is. Everybody, you'll understand. Oh, yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Time for the idiot of the week, moron, who did something just so stupid that you can't think of anything to do other than the millennial thing to do, and that's slap a crying Jordan face on him and shame him over the internet. So, Aaron, crying Jordan face of the week, who you got?
My crying Jordan face of the week is none other than, happened last night, none other than Luke Falk.
It's a good one.
Luke Falk came into the game. You know, everybody's talking about, and this offense is putting up points. They're a top 10 team. He's going to be he looks like an NFL type quarterback. All he does is come in last night and throw five interceptions and muster 3 points on the road against Cal. An easy selection, a safe selection for crying Jordan face of the week, but also a very deserving selection as well. Luke Falk is my crying Jordan face of the week. It was actually kind of difficult to get his head to fit perfectly on the picture that I chose, but I think it turned out pretty humorous there. If you go take a look at that, at the Tony Mack and the Triplet Twitter.
There was not just one on my list deserving. There were three, because count them 1, 2, 3 this weekend or this week starting on Wednesday. I think there were three teams that were double-digit favorites coming into this week, and all three of them went down. So if you go check it out, you'll see a pick collage of mine. On the left, you've got Mike Leach last night, who put up one of the more embarrassing games I've seen in the last 5 years. And you said Luke Falk had five picks, five turnovers. I know for a fact he had at least six. Because he had one of the fumbles, the scoop and score. I'm not sure where the first turnover he had came from, the other fumble came from, but I know he at least had six of the seven turnovers, so that was a good one by you. Mike Leach, the head coach of that clown show, is my first crying Jordan face of the week. And, of course, again last night, Dabo Swinney double-digit favorites on the road, Syracuse. They go down as the number two team in the country. And finally, a lot of people forgot about this one. It slipped through the cracks. You wanted to celebrate them and praise them when it happened. You got their players flicking off fans and grabbing their junk in Baton Rouge because they pulled off a great upset over LSU. Well, they go on a bye week, and they forget who they are all of a sudden. And they allow South Alabama, 1-4, South Alabama, to knock off the 4-1 Troy Trojans. So Troy, the music kicked up perfectly, by the way. I did not cue that up. So Neil Brown, head coach of Troy, crying Jordan face of the week.
I would say this, Neil Brown's, his looks hilarious. Right there, with got the headset around his neck. It fits so perfectly. Just take a little time to zoom in on that and appreciate Neil Brown as a sad Michael Jordan.
See, that's what you guys got to understand. This whole crying Jordan face, it's fun because you get to you know, tease people, but it's also an art. It's an art form.
It is an art. And I don't know if we discussed this live on the show yet or if we just kind of done it just in passing, you know, before or after the show. But the thing that makes the crying Jordan face is the neckline. If you can nail the neckline, you have successfully made a hilarious crying Jordan face.
You are 100% correct. And you can always tell when you're looking for a picture like I did with the Neil Brown picture and the Mike Leake picture and all that. You can always tell when it's going to be a good crying
Jordan
face.
Exactly, exactly. I thought I was going to have a chance with Luke Falk. I had to tweak it a little bit, and I rotated it so slightly to where it was at the same angle, so it looks like he's looking up throwing the pass. But it didn't quite fit as gracefully on the neck as I wanted to. But I've had some good – one of my favorites, of course, was last week or 2 weeks ago when it was our good buddy Tyler Howe as the – and I think what made that one was the way he was sitting on his porch.
It was beautiful.
It was glorious.
You took a very happy moment, happy picture of him, and turned it into something that looks very naturally sulky.
Yeah, it does look naturally – yeah, because the actual picture, if nobody else saw it, but it was a picture of him. He's got two older sisters and his – second oldest sister she's just had her second baby, so he's an uncle now of two, but it was with her first child, and it was a very happy photo, but it was turned into, I'm sad and sulking on my porch.
Turned into something shameful and to be embarrassed about. All right, that's going to do it for the first hour of Tony Mac and the Triplet. When we come back, Aaron and I will break down our picks from a week ago, give you our standings, and jump in to the picks of the week. And, of course, that comes with a little SEC football. That's right here, Tony Mac and the Triplet, Sports Radio, 730, 1039. Stay tuned.
It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet. That's hour number two here. Just an hour away from kickoff. We're going to get you guys set up. Now, a word of caution. I know it's not the best looking week out there. I get that. And there aren't any eye-popping top 25 matchups, but just keep an eye out. Keep your eyes peeled. Because we saw some wacky stuff go down last night. Washington State, number 18 in the country, goes down to Cal. Yeah, you expected them to slip up here and there, but you didn't expect them to turn the ball over seven times. Oh, yeah, and that number two team in the country, the only team that has a chance outside of the SEC to beat Alabama, Clemson, they went down as well. So everybody is on notice this week. Expect nothing and be ready for anything. That's right. All right, Aaron. Speaking of, we've had a crazy pick'em situation, okay? It's been really weird because we've jumped back and forth on who's winning, who's not. Last week was really boring because the only game we picked against each other was on a Thursday night, so it was settled before we came into the show. And that was the Louisville-NC State game. You won that one. So the rest of the games, the rest of the way, we picked the same game. So let's get into it. Starting with West Virginia They went on the road to take on TCU. Aaron, you had the home team, the TCU Horned Frogs, as did I. Good job by us. Yeah, well, I'll give us two. I'll give us another. There we go, because we both picked them. All right. One win for us. Then LSU on the road, Florida, a slight favorite, a point and a half favorite to LSU. Nuh-uh. Nope, I got to give you one. Yep, there we go. We both get one for that one. We both pick Florida, the home team there as well. We got that one wrong. Just to show you again, don't have confidence in an SEC East team. Don't do it. Do not have confidence in an SEC East team. And just saying that actually helped me pick one of our games today just now. Then we have Washington State going on the road to Oregon, the team that just lost last night. We both picked Oregon. Now, yeah, we both. Yeah, there's yours. Yeah, had to wait for it. We both picked Oregon. Even with a backup quarterback, we thought they might have enough juice on at home to take that one out. And that's when Washington State really impressed me. They blew Oregon out. They take charge in the second half. They pull away. And I'm thinking, okay, Washington State might make a run until Washington and they get blown out. But obviously, wrong about that one too, because they went down last night to Cal on one of the wackiest Fridays we'll have in a very long time. Then Stanford went to Utah. Now, this one was a very close game. Utah having a backup quarterback, if their starting quarterback would have played, I might have picked them. Stanford wins by 3 points. And I tried to bait you into picking Utah because I was going to pick Stanford. You didn't fall for it, Aaron. You picked Stanford. Yeah, there you go. Good job by you. Me? Well, let me get, yeah, give me one. I'd pick Stanford. I'm going to get two just because I want to get my, I've got the power over here. So I can get myself as many of these as I want to. And then finally, we had Miami going to Florida State in another wacky game where, honestly, if Francois plays this game, Florida State wins this game easy. Blackman did them no favors, threw a couple really ugly picks, didn't look good. Miami really doesn't look great doing anything. Like they look average moving the ball. Their defense is average.
Kind of, and it's a classic Mark Richt team. I mean, they're just a tough, you know, pretty talented, but just a tough team that's not going to play great. But, I mean, they've got a good head coach. Now, I mean, Mark Richt, he's not a great, fantastic head coach or anything, but he's a really good coach. And Georgia made a mistake firing him. Of course, Georgia looks good now. Don't know how Kirby Smart's going to play out down the road, but Miami's in good position here. They don't, like you said, they don't look great, but they do get a big win, and that's the first time they'd beaten Florida State in several years. So big win for them, though. I think big mental win also.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and we both picked Miami, so. Yeah, there's one for me. There's yours. I'm going to get an extra one just because I can. All right, so there we have it. That brings our total standings. I'm 18-16 overall. You're 21-13, so you have a 3-game lead on me, Aaron. We're going to make that change today, okay? You hear the paper turning over. I kind of ripped it a little bit. It's okay. We're going to change that. That shows how aggressive I am about this because, I'm telling you right now, I'm coming for you. Coming for you, Aaron. You're peaking too early.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Exactly. Listen to him. You peaked early. I'm coming for you. And with that being said, we're going to go and jump into it now. We're going to do our picks of the week. Aaron, I'm going to start with you. We're going to start with a great 230 game. Auburn on the road at LSU. Haven't won there since Cole Kubelik's famous cigar game in 1999, what he still claims is the hottest game he's ever played. Aaron, I'm asking you. I'm gonna need you to tell me how this game works out because I'm telling you, it's going to be side-by-side with the Oklahoma-Texas game. I'm not going to pay a damn bit of attention to it. I'm just going to let you know that right now. My eyes will be glued on the Red River Showdown. So tell me, who wins this football game?
Well, like you said, Auburn hadn't beaten LSU in Death Valley since 1999. They've come close several times. They can come to mind. Number one of them is 2005. John Vaughn missed 5 field goals. They lost in overtime. Kenny Irons ran for 220 yards. 2007, Brandon Cox hits Montez Billings on a fantastic two-minute drive right down the field to take the lead on the number. I think LSU was number 2 at the time. And then all they do is they go down. Questionable clock management, to say the least, by Les Miles. And Matt Flynn throws a deep ball to Demetrius Byrd. If Gerard Powers turns around, he knocks the ball away, and the clock runs out. That's, to this day, one of the most heartbreaking losses as a fan that I've ever experienced. But came close both of those two times to taking out LSU on the road. And, of course, in 2013, they played a tough game, and it was Auburn's only loss to Florida State. So, like I said, those two chances really in 05 and 07 were their best chances to beat LSU on the road since the 99 game. And I think Auburn does it this week. But this game is only a 7.5-point spread for a reason. I think that the key is Auburn's defense. If Auburn's defense shows up and plays to their caliber against this LSU offense, I don't see LSU scoring more than 7 points. I do see LSU's defense showing up, though, and I think Stidham needs to find a rhythm early. But I think if Auburn puts up 20, they should win the game. I've got it in a more low-scoring game than probably you might think. I think Auburn only puts up about 20, but I think the defense holds LSU and really stifles them, and they struggle. So I think Auburn kind of takes control just defensively, but struggles more than you would think in this game. But I'm going to take Auburn to get a win here, finally to win in Death Valley.
You know, what I think hurts LSU the most in this game isn't their inability on offense to move the ball, especially against a great Auburn defense. I don't know if Auburn's defense necessarily might get a little worn out today because their offense might struggle a little bit. I don't know that. All I know is the thing that hurts LSU the most is the time of the game. You get Auburn in Death Valley, and you have to think, damn it, we have to play them at 2:30. This place comes to life at nighttime. A nighttime at Death Valley with a marquee matchup is an atmosphere that will kick the crap out of the one we're going to see this afternoon. Don't get me wrong. It'll be a good atmosphere, and I think it'll be enough to kind of get some of the Auburn players on their toes a little bit, a little tight. It's going to get LSU to play very well, I think, on defense and tighten up and give them that physical presence they haven't had this season, really, on defense. They've been really controlled up front. I think that hurts them. I really do. And I think if it was at night, I think LSU would have a realistic chance of winning this game and just accidentally being in it just because of the atmosphere. I'm going to go with Auburn as well. I think LSU covers. I think it's maybe a field goal game and Auburn escapes. But just when it comes down to it, they have a playmaker on offense with Jared Stidham. He's starting to figure this thing out. They finally figured out a good formula on the offensive line. He's got a little more time to throw. Now, it is important not to regress where Jared Stidham has come. He's figured out a good formula on the offensive line, as I mentioned, but here's the problem. He hasn't seen an atmosphere like this. Sure, he went to since Death Valley, and you remember what happened in Death Valley. He took 11 sacks, partially because he doesn't know how to get rid of the football in time. He's gotten better at that, being more decisive. Well, now he's going to be in a very, very loud stadium. Everybody wants to see him burn. So he's got to keep his composure. And he's got to get the ball out quickly again. He can't take too much time and be indecisive. He's got to make up his mind. But I think maybe get him a couple quick throws to start this game, get him into a good rhythm, and get him comfortable. And I think Auburn takes care of business. I like LSU to cover, but I'm going with the Tigers as well. So, Aaron, you and I on the board together. Hopefully it's not going to be one of those weeks where we picked all the same games again. I don't think it's going to be. We're going to move into our next game. Georgia Tech going on the road to Miami. Miami coming off of a big-time win against the Seminoles of Florida State. Aaron, Georgia Tech or Miami, who you got?
Well, Miami is actually one of the is the only stadium in the ACC which Paul Johnson has gone to but not come out with a win. Paul Johnson has traveled to Miami before and has 0-4 all four times. So, and I think that trend's going to continue. And Georgia Tech is really hurt. They're missing some key guys. And I think Miami takes care of business. They're at home. I think it's close. I think that I can't remember the quarterback's name for Georgia Tech for the life of me, but he played a fantastic game against Tennessee earlier in the season. I think he plays well, but I think that Miami does a little bit too much and Georgia Tech's a little bit too banged up. I think Miami tries to keep the ball away from Georgia Tech, and I think they play a good game. I think this game's close. But I've got the Hurricanes at home to win a big game.
Well, it's an interesting matchup. I think Miami's coming off of a big time win for their program against Florida State. But I think if you look deeper at that, I think what you're going to see is Florida State's quarterback position helped them out a lot. Justin Blackman did not play very well. I think you're going to get a a more well-oiled machine in Clemson or in Georgia Tech's offense today. Georgia Tech's defense, not necessarily, they really haven't necessarily played anybody, but as far as total yards given up this season, they're number one in the country. Yards per game, they're sixth. They play okay defense, and Miami, as we mentioned, Miami really doesn't do anything great. They don't move the football fantastic. You don't look at them and say, wow, you know, the offense is okay, but this guy's special, or that guy's great. I don't anyway. In their defense, they don't do anything great on defense either. Just kind of average. And you're talking about Georgia Tech banged up? Miami's banged up. Miami's already been banged up, and they just lost three starters for this game on defense. So, Aaron,
you done messed up, A.A. Ron!
I have to tell you, man, I'm going to let him say it again.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
I'm going with Georgia Tech here. I think Paul Johnson gets his, I think that trend snaps. I don't think Miami's that great. I think this is one of those games where we kind of sift out the pretenders and some of those undefeated teams. Now, Miami might figure things out later and get a good bowl game, but I think this is the week we're starting to figure out, okay, this is where we draw the line. The teams under this line can still compete for the New Year's Six games and maybe some other good bowl games, but they're not contenders. There's no way they stay undefeated. So I'm going Georgia Tech on this one. I knew that was going to be the game we picked against each other on. When I told you I don't think we picked the same games before the show, that was the one I had in mind, and I was correct. Now, let's get into it. It's the Red River Rivalry Week. You're wearing Texas. You're wearing the burnt orange. I've got on the Beat Texas shirt. So I really don't think there's any question of where I'm going. So I'm going to go ahead and throw this one down right now. Oklahoma avenges their loss to Iowa State a week ago. I know it wasn't to Texas, but it's a good thing they lost last week because now they have something to play for. You know, people are starting to doubt them again. They play with that edge, and it's this rivalry game. That's going to be the edge they need for this rivalry game. Texas played very well against USC, but they didn't beat them. Texas still looking for that win. That's not enough for them. That's a moral victory. Tom Herman wants an actual victory over a good team. And don't think Lincoln Riley forgot what his Houston team did to Oklahoma last year to start the season. So Lincoln Riley might have a little bit of revenge there as well. So will Baker Mayfield. So, Aaron, there's no question here. I think it's a close game. I don't think Oklahoma covers the 9-point spread, but Oklahoma's going to win this football game. Boomer Sooner, they win the Red River Rivalry.
Yeah, Texas is actually, when you think about it, Texas is actually 6-3 against Oklahoma when they're unranked, and Oklahoma's ranked in the last 9 times they met when that's the case. Not a good trend for Oklahoma for sure, but this game is always entertaining. I think something will happen in this game that's fluky, probably a defensive score of some sort. But I think Oklahoma's going to pull it out. I think this is going to be a really fun game to watch. I think Shane Buechele throws the ball around and Texas puts up some points. But I think Mayfield and the offense at Oklahoma is just too good. They're going to rebound in a big way that they need to after that loss to Iowa State. But I do think it's going to be an entertaining game. And despite wearing a Texas shirt today, I am going Boomer Sooner in Oklahoma to win this game. They should win it. They're the better team. So I think they're going to go out and get it done.
Nobody talks about it, but last year the game was very good. Oklahoma won 45-40. They ended up finally, you know, ending Texas's run there while their lateral play at the end of the game. It was a very good game. But early in that game, it was a low-scoring game at the half, and Baker Mayfield threw a couple picks, something he hasn't done yet this season. He hasn't thrown an interception and took a couple late shots. And it was a very chippy first half, and then it was an explosive second half. Big shot after big shot after big shot. Shane Buechele going downfield, burning the secondary. Baker Mayfield with D.D. Westbrook burning the secondary. They have a speedster like that to pick up the slack in Jeff Badette, the transfer from Kentucky. He's played very, very well this year. There have been plays where he's picked up first downs on speed alone. The play had been broken up, and he gets there on speed alone. So they've got that explosiveness. They've got a better backfield than they did last year as far as talent goes, in my opinion. I know P. Ryan and Mixon were amazing talents, and they don't have the experience, this backfield doesn't, that they had last year. But they have 4 very talented backs that they've used all year, and that's a backfield that is a force to be reckoned with. If you take any defense in the top 10 and put them behind this Oklahoma team, Oklahoma won't be touched until the national championship game. This is absolutely a championship caliber offense, but unfortunately they have a defense where the offense is going to have to score every time they touch the ball. So that's why I think it's a close game and it's a rivalry. So I've got the Sooners as well. Now, another rivalry game that we've seen come to life with in the Jim Harbaugh era, the Chip Kelly era, and now the David Shaw era. Can Willie Taggart go on the road and upset Stanford?
No. Simply put, after that really pitiful showing, and I went and picked them last week against Washington State. I thought they were going to be able to get it done, but going on the road against just a better team in Stanford, they're going to have to deal with Bryce Love this week, who's averaging over 200 yards a game rushing, leading the nation in rushing, rushed over 1,000 yards already. He's averaging an absurd 10.5 yards per carry. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think he continues that today, gathers up a ton of all-purpose yards, and I think that Oregon struggles, and I think Stanford gets it done. I think they're just going to get a heavy dose of Bryce Love, and Stanford's going to get a big win.
Well, Aaron, I agree with you. I think the Bryce Love is too much. He's becoming one of those spectacles where he breaks a huge run every week, and you just kind of wait for it to happen. Utah had one of the best rushing defenses in the country going into last week's game, and Bryce Love still got loose back there. So, yeah, I've got to go. And Oregon's defense isn't more than, you know, some duct tape and bubble gum back there being stuck together. So I think Stanford's going to have a field day. Stanford doesn't play great defense either, so I think Oregon's going to be able to put up some points there. But it is in Stanford, so ultimately I think that is the decisive factor in this game. So we'll go with the Cardinals as well. And we got two games left, and I just realized we had two games left. I haven't picked one yet. It's a tough one for me to pick. But I'm going to throw this one at you first. South Carolina on the road in Knoxville now. Tennessee coming off the, according to Butch, the best bye week they've ever had. Oh, it was an incredible bye week, because that's important. That's something. I mean, it's great to have a good bye week, but I don't know how you judge it's the best one you've ever had.
Well, he didn't get a loss on the bye week.
It was a close game. It was a close game on the bye week, but you're right. They did pull that one out. Now, I don't know how physical they were in practice as far as the bye week goes. I don't know how where Butch is on his physical reps, but I know the leadership reps
Are up. Yes,
they were up this week, so he's feeling pretty good about it. Do you feel good about South Carolina and Knoxville taking down the slight favorite in the Vols, or do you think Tennessee pulls this one out?
Tennessee, and my grandfather is a University of Tennessee grad, and I poke fun at Tennessee, and sometimes I hate bagging on them. I mean, they're a good university, obviously, because, you know, I know related to an alumni, and I know that he never really talks about Tennessee very much, probably because he is a little embarrassed about how they are. But they're pitiful. They're pitiful, and it's a joke. Like, this is getting serious. Like, we say Tennessee's a joke. It is a joke. They need a complete restructured change. And Butch Jones just says stuff. He just asks to get made fun of. I mean, championships of life? Leadership reps? Are you kidding me? Because that's all you have to hang your hat on right now is leadership reps and championships of life. Yeah, okay, winning the championship of life, everybody wants to do that. And really and truly, that's a good thing to think about yourself. But when you're trying to, like, solve a problem, that's not the way that you address the media of what you're trying to accomplish as a head coach. That's just not.
And middle of a football season.
Middle of the football season. And South Carolina coming off a big win over Arkansas last week where I think that was last week, and they scored, you know, like three defensive touchdowns or something last week. It was ridiculous. South Carolina's going to go in and win this game, I think. Bentley's going to have a good game. And all this about Quentin Dormady supposedly, you know, might be leaving the program to transfer right here in the middle of the season. Saying that Tennessee is a dumpster fire right now is an understatement. They're a landfill fire, if you can even say that, because it is. I don't think Tennessee's going to go to a bowl game. I just don't see it happening. Their schedule gets too brutal down the stretch. They've got to play. Wow. Still got to play. They still got to play Kentucky. They still got to play Vanderbilt. No slouches at all. They have to go to Tuscaloosa, which they might not even cross the 50-yard line in that game, let alone score a point. So, I mean, it is going to be, if they don't win this week, it's going to be tough for them to win to make a bowl game. I mean, they're sitting there at 3-2 right now. They're 0-2 in the SEC. I think they have their three wins are against Georgia Tech, which they shouldn't have won, and two and an FCS, and then UMass. I think for those three wins,
winless UMass, and Indiana State.
So those are the three wins they have. So they have, I think they have one more cupcake game coming up towards the end of the season, so that'll be their fourth win. And they're going to have to beat a combination of either Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Alabama, which they're not going to win. Do they have another West crossover game? They should.
They play LSU.
LSU.
Coming to Knoxville.
That's the one they're going to have to try to win. I don't understand how they're three-point favorites against South Carolina, to be totally honest with you. I don't understand how Tennessee's three-point favorites against South Carolina, unless Vegas knows something that we don't. They oftentimes do. But I don't know how, with a sound mind, that you pick Tennessee to beat South Carolina by 3 points.
So I'm assuming you're going with South Carolina.
Yes, absolutely. South Carolina is going to go in and win this football game. I'm almost 100% confident in it.
I'm going to read you off some games or some stats here for the SEC. Now, Tennessee, as far as passing yards a game goes, in the SEC, they're number one. In the country, they're number three in passing yards allowed per game. You want to know why? Because their running defense is that bad. And yes, I mean, they're dead last in the SEC. They allow 252 yards a game on the ground in the and that's good for dead last in the SEC.
And they played one in game in the first game of the season, and Georgia Tech threw like seven passes.
And Aaron, do you know where they're ranked as far as nationwide goes on rushing defense? You know how many teams there are in FBS Division
I? 126, I think. 120. There's more now. Maybe 120, 130 now. We're at 130 now. Yeah.
Tennessee ranks 124th in rushing defense. They're almost dead last in the country in rushing defense. But it doesn't get much better. In the SEC, as far as total defense, they're ranked ninth. 382 yards a game. That's 63rd for the country. South Carolina, they're ranked 12th in the SEC as far as yards per game goes. 395 yards a game. They give up 145 on the ground. And as far as passing goes, this will be a good week to break in Garantano, your new quarterback. So at home, South Carolina gives up 249 passing yards a game. That's 97th in the country, 11th in the SEC. SEC defenses, by the way, I've got where they all rank after this week, after last week, as far as total defense, rushing yards per game, and passing yards per game written down here. I've got their SEC ranks and their nation ranks. Let me tell you something. Spoiler alert, they suck. The defense in the SEC sucks. I hate it for you. Hang your hat on Auburn. Hang your hat on Alabama and Georgia.
Hang your hat on Georgia and Alabama and Auburn.
I'm sorry, it's not enough to cover. It's not enough to make up. You can't. If I tell you the defense in the SEC sucks and you say, well, yeah, they do, but, you know, Alabama's good and Georgia's good and Auburn's good, I'll be like, yeah. But if you're like, well, hold on, Alabama, Auburn, and Georgia, if you come at me with that tone, I'm going to say I'm sorry. That's not enough to cover it, because the rest of the defenses, there are 11 other teams outside of those three teams, and they all suck on defense. And that's putting it nicely.
Texas A&M probably has the fourth best defense in the conference, and they looked – Texas A&M played a pretty decent game against Alabama. They gave up some huge touchdown runs, but they stiffened when they needed to, and they kind of contained Alabama somewhat. So they're probably the fourth best, at least from what from that one performance. They looked pitiful against UCLA, but there's no real other SEC team that can hang their hat on. I mean, yeah, they gave up 29 points to Alabama, but if you watch that game, the defense looked pretty decent against Alabama. But if you look, well, LSU, Florida, they're only giving up this many points. LSU and Florida's defenses look good because of how bad other offenses are.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
LSU and Florida last week, that was not a defensive game. That was, we can't play offense.
And to put it this way, Mississippi State's taken two blowout losses in the SEC to Auburn and Alabama, and they're still the
Auburn and Georgia.
Auburn and Georgia. They have an Alabama game coming up. Auburn and Georgia. And they're still the fourth best statistical defense in the SEC. That's sad.
After giving up, you know, 70 points to Auburn and Georgia combined.
Exactly. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to our last
80 points. I think it was 49 and 31, so 80 points.
We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we will make our last pick, the Texas A&M Florida game. And, Aaron, I've got to tell you, as far as the Tennessee South Carolina game goes,
you done messed up, A.A. Ron!
I'm going Vols. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet. That is right. We're just 28 minutes away from kickoff for you guys, which means we're that much closer to the Red River Showdown. I can't get over how excited I am for that game. Aaron, we've left one game on the board. I left you with the bombshell. I'm going with the Volunteers. That's right. They win this game. Tennessee's going to win this game at home. Everybody's focusing in on the Volunteers and how awful they look. I get that. But Garantano gets to go up against a very bad defense at home, a crowd that'll be uneasy, but he gets a chance to open up a little bit. And South Carolina, for whatever Tennessee's defense is worth, I get South Carolina will be able to move the ball, but I don't think they're built to blow anybody out either because their defense, well, they suck. So I'm going with the Volunteers here, and I actually do have a little bit of confidence. You're 100% sure South Carolina's going to win this game, so this will be a fun one. Now, that's a game I didn't expect us to pick against each other on with that much confidence. That one's at 11 o'clock, so we'll miss the first bit of that game driving home. But that'll be a good one to stick with. But I needed to get out why I picked Tennessee. So now we're going to move into the last game of the week here. A&M, that's Texas A&M, going on the road to Gainesville, to the Swamp, to take on the Florida Gators, coming off of a heartbreaking loss to LSU because of a missed extra point. Now, for whatever reason, Aaron, I'm not quite sure why, because I guess college the lines makers are like us, and they have zero confidence in the SEC East or what the hell's going on besides Alabama, Auburn, and Georgia in the SEC period. But they have Florida as a three-point favorite here.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe because they're that's just a gimme because they're at home. But Texas A&M played a tough game against Alabama last week. Kellen Mond is starting to kind of come into his own. He is kind of figuring out who he is. He's definitely was the best quarterback on that roster, turned out. And Florida just, they're just so pitiful offensively. If Texas A&M's defense plays like it did last week, they should win this game. So that's why I'm going Texas A&M on the road. If they put an effort like they did last week against Alabama and show up and play Florida this way, then they'll get this win on the road. So I'm taking the Aggies. I think Mon plays well. I think their defense plays well. And I think it's a tough game, but I think they pull away by 10 at the end of the game to knock off Florida.
Yeah, the Aggies have to figure it out. I hope they do this week. They have to figure out that effort you give against Alabama, you have to come with that effort against any SEC team. So, traditionally anyway. So they've got to come with that against Florida. If they do that, they have a chance. Florida's offense still a little stagnant. That defense has a chance to do something really special in Gainesville. The offense is figuring things out. Florida needs to bounce back, but it was kind of a deflating loss to LSU because they lost it on their own fault with a missed extra point. A&M lost that game just because they were kind of running out of opportunity. A drive there at the end where Mon took a couple sacks. It was a great learning experience, but it was a bad decision. I'm hoping A&M doesn't come in here too high and you know, even though they lost last week, they don't come in expecting the world because they were within a touchdown of Alabama. And Florida, I just don't know if they're going to be able to turn it around because of how they lost last week. But I'm the same way. I'm a little cautious here, but I'm going with A&M. I'm going with the Aggies. I think they pull it out as well, and it's over with. So there we have it. We picked against each other twice today. Run it down. We both picked Auburn over LSU. I picked Georgia Tech over Miami. You went the opposite. You went with the Canes. We both picked Oklahoma and Stanford. I picked Tennessee. You picked South Carolina. And we both have A&M beating the Gators. Now let's get into the rest of this college football week here. Mississippi State. We kind of know where they stand as far as the rest of the SEC goes, the top tier. We know they're not with the Auburns and the Georgias of the world and the SEC, but are they that next best team? They play BYU, a game last year where BYU won and stormed the field on a Mississippi State team that wasn't very good. Now Mississippi State's a 23-point favorite, and I really think that's just because BYU sucks. But I think it's an important week for Nick Fitzgerald to bounce back and really show himself, show out, get back to that LSU kind of form. They're back at home, which is a big deal. I think they cover. Maybe. It's going to be tough. What do you think? Do you think they cover here? More importantly, do you think they bounce back and at least look good?
I think they do bounce back and they look good. I don't know if they cover that 23-point spread. It's pretty big.
Yeah, it's tricky.
But they're definitely going to get a win. And BYU, they are terrible. It is absolutely embarrassing. I watched them play Boise State the other Friday night, and they looked abysmal. They haven't lost five straight games in years, and they just don't know what's going on. When Bronco Mendenhall left to go to Virginia, which was one of the biggest surprises, and he's a he's a pretty good coach. He's a decent coach. He's not great. I mean, he'll win you 8 games, occasionally maybe 9. But he was what was keeping them, you know, a decent team. Yeah. And because BYU, of course, is a religious school, they have a rule. They have to hire a Mormon head coach.
Which is weird because you don't have to be Mormon to play there.
No, you don't have to be. But you have to be – you almost do because of the specific rules that the school has and things like that. But
What was Jim McMahon? There's no way in hell Jim McMahon was a Mormon. He was not Mormon. He definitely didn't practice it.
You don't have to. I mean, you don't have to be like I said, but you have to at least act like you're practicing while you go to school there. But you have to be one to be the head coach there. And they went after and threw everything they had at Ken Niumatalolo, the coach at Navy, which would have been the best hire they possibly could have made. And then they threw it at this other guy who I had no idea who he was. I don't even know his name. He's another Hawaiian guy, very much like the head coach at Navy. And that's hurting them because he was a no-name head coach or a no-name coach that they had to hire because of this rule. And while I understand it and can respect it because of what you're trying to do as a school, that's hurting them because he's not a good coach. Yeah. And I don't know who else.
BYU's just not a good football
team. And they're not a good football team either.
I absolutely agree with you. Now, I think the more intriguing game, I got to get to it in a minute because that's a good talking point. But Georgia, Missouri, Georgia, 29.5-point favorite, they cover that, right? They cover that easy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to – Missouri is it is abysmal. Missouri, you can't even describe. Words can't describe them.
I want to see Jake Fromm have a great game. You know, he's played really well, but he benefits a lot from having the running backs. He scored a bunch of touchdowns. He's good on his feet down there in the red zone. But I want to see him win a game. You know what I mean? Because as of right now, if we're talking all about Auburn, Alabama, and Georgia, I think he's the weak point out of those three teams because
he is. I don't know if he's the weak point. He's the biggest question mark out of any of those teams.
Now, he looks really good, but when it boils down to it, for me, if he's in a big game, I kind of see him as a game manager. And it might be blasphemy because he's played well, but I do. He's got all the talent in the world. He's really calm and poised. I really like that about him, how he really never seems to be under pressure. But I just kind of have a game manager feel about him. So I want to see him break out against Missouri.
See, the thing is, though, the SEC is so weak outside of those three teams, he's not going to have to go win a game until he plays Auburn. And they're going to be unbeaten more than likely in a few weeks when they play Auburn. And he's going to have to go on the road and play a top-10 defense. Well, I think they're ranked 11th in yards.
Well, their defense will be able to keep them in that.
And in my opinion, a top-10 defense. And, of course, Georgia's defense will keep them in it as well. That'll be a fun game. And then, of course, Alabama. They'll have to go against Alabama also. But I'm going to bring up another interesting point because we're talking about quarterbacks and we're talking about SEC quarterbacks of these really big teams. And last year, of course, I told you I read that article about the prediction for the rest of the season. And it said that Jalen Hurts is going to be a more polished passer come to the national title against a championship Clemson defense, and he's going to be able to make more plays down the field against Clemson this season. But really, I'm thinking about it. Last year, I mean, he was a true freshman coming in last year, and of course, in the championship game, other than a long pass to O.J. Howard, he didn't do much at all. Throwing the football. One thing that hurts Jalen Hurts is the fact that they don't play anybody who can challenge them until it matters. And when they get somebody that challenges them, he wasn't ready for that game. He made the long drive on the big stage, but he was using his legs. When he has to make a big throw against a great defense in crunch time, is he going to be able to do that? I think that he will, but I don't think that most individuals think about the fact that because he's never in a situation where he's trailing and has to go out and beat somebody.
Well, my question to you is he going to be in that situation? And it's not because Alabama's just that much better than everybody else outside of the SEC, but that rushing game, they run for over 300 yards a game. You know what I mean? And they've got so many backs in the backfield.
They got about four or five guys who can and hurt you, and he can do it as well.
Is he ever going to be in that? I still understand. I understand where everybody's coming from, like, as far as just developing, period, Is he going to get better at that? But my thing is, as far as winning football games goes, I don't know if he's going to need to.
He's not going to I don't think he's going to have to. And that's perfectly fine. I'm just that was just an interesting point. And Fromm is the same way.
Yeah, oh, it's a great point.
And
I agree.
And Stidham also. I mean, Stidham went on the road and already played Clemson, and he didn't play very well. I mean, but he's not having to play anybody worth really anything defensively so far until he plays Georgia. So, I mean, yeah, you have LSU today, which is going to be one of the bigger tests. But the quarterbacks in the SEC of the good teams aren't tested until they have like one or two games all season where they have to show up and play. And they don't have to go out and do that every week.
Where Stidham and Fromm are, I understand that, but as far as them, as far as those two goes, it's a little different than Hurts. Hurts has a year of experience under his belt, so these tune-up games essentially in the SEC, they mean a lot more for Auburn and for Georgia and Jake Fromm and Jared Stidham at Auburn, because what they're doing, especially after the Clemson game for Jared Stidham, they're building confidence. They're building confidence not only in what he's able to do, but in the players around him. I mean, against Clemson, you're right, Stidham didn't look good. Partially, he wasn't being decisive enough, but also his offensive line gave up 11 sacks. He took 11 sacks in that football game. So these other games going forward, it speaks wonders, because now it's not like he played Clemson, had a bye week, and then is going into the Georgia game. He's got this time to build confidence in the other players around him, saying, okay, you know, we're starting from scratch. These guys have got confidence in you guys now because of what we've been able to do against these other teams. It's not because they suck. It's because we're getting reps in. Now we're starting to understand each other. So, and the same goes for Jake Fromm. He's a freshman coming in. He hasn't necessarily had sack problems, but he's building confidence around his guys. Like, these tune-up games are something I would value if I was Jake Fromm, because I'm still trying to figure things out. We're not losing while I'm in here. I'm letting the rest of the team, I guess, win the games while I'm trying to figure this thing out.
And I guess I'm just nitpicking things.
You're making a good point.
For Alabama, and even for these other two good teams in Georgia and Auburn. But when you nitpick for Alabama, when people find these nitpick things about them during the season, if they don't win the national championship, that's one of the reasons why. And I was watching the Texas A&M game last weekend, and Texas A&M was doing a good job containing Hurts for the most part. He broke a couple runs, but they forced him out of the pocket, and he made a throw on it was on the run. It was bad. It looked ugly, and it wasn't intercepted. It just hit the ground about 4 yards in front of the receiver, and he's just not a great passer. He throws a good deep ball that's pretty accurate because he steps up and throws it and throw it a mile. He's not a great passer. He's not going to beat you with accuracy.
Yeah. He's a great football player.
Great football player, and he's not going to play quarterback at the next level.
No
I
way.
Think he's got
no.
a – and he just glides when he runs. He's deceptively fast because he just glides past you. So I don't know how fast he would be at the next level as a receiver. Probably
maybe,
not.
Maybe a Denard Robinson thing. Go to running
be
back.
Be a running back. I could see that. But he's not going to beat you with his arm. And – another thing is, this team looks, as far as at the other than Calvin Ridley, and they've got as talented receiving core as anybody. Who's going to be that next guy to step up and make plays at receiver? Is it Robert Foster? Is it Jerry? Who is it? Jerry Jeudy made a couple catches against A&M, but outside of Calvin Ridley, their team targets it's so low. Yeah. Outside of him. And it's turning into the 2014 Amari Cooper, when they gave him the ball every time. And that's okay. Like, I think that's good coaching. You get the ball to your best player, the guys who can make the plays. But it cost them against Ohio State. Because there was a play that I remember specifically where Blake Sims stared Amari Cooper down and threw it right to a defensive lineman who dropped back into his zone. Yeah. Threw it right to him.
And the point you just made is a good one, and I'll get to my point here in just a second, but like what you mentioned was Blake Sims wasn't the best passer, and they didn't have another go-to guy. It was all Amari Cooper or nothing, and when it came down to it didn't matter during the regular season because Alabama was so good other than the Ole Miss game. And then when it mattered, when they needed to make that throw, that problem showed up. Well, it's kind of the same right now. You're making great points, and they make the world of sense. But the problem is, no one's going to hear you until it matters. You know what I mean? Because there's just no game right
now. You're right. You're right.
And
it's exactly. It's. You're exactly right.
If that problem never shows up, people are going to call you stupid. Well, we didn't need to throw the ball. I'm not saying that you did need to throw the ball. I'm just saying that if you had needed to throw it, Hurts wouldn't have done a good job at it. So as far as the point you're making, it's a great point.
And they're also Alabama is more banged up than they have been in years. They've gotten a lot of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe not to major starters, but it hurts their depth. And, of course, they're arguably the deepest team in the country anyway, but they are getting nicked up, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And you're right, they are incredibly deep at running back. They got four guys they can give it to, and if none of those guys, even if two of those guys get hurt, they still got two more of them. And you're right, they're going to be able to run the football, but let's just say down the road, if they get to where they get to Alabama or Auburn and Georgia, and they can't run the ball for some reason, you know, Hurts might have to beat him through the air. People forget he threw like three picks against Auburn last year. And threw him right to Auburn defenders.
Yeah, they did not look good.
And so, and he's just masked by the fact that he's the most talented quarterback they've had in years.
For sure.
And
he's a great football player, just not a great quarterback.
Not a great quarterback. He's just not, and that's where it struggles developmental wise at Alabama, because you're so much better. You're never put in situations where you have to make these plays. So we'll just have to see how that plays out, like you said.
You're right. I hope it does play out, because I want that problem to be out there, because I at least want the best for Hurts. I'd like to see him try to develop, but they just don't need it right now. And under Dayball's offense, it's a run heavy offense anyway. But we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about one more SEC game. In my opinion, the most intriguing game in the SEC this week, and it's swirling the drain of the SEC. So who is that? I'll tell you when we come back. It's Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730 103.9 The Elm. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplets. Short segment here. Just a couple of minutes to tell you guys that we got some great football coming up for you. That Tennessee-South Carolina game Aaron and I picked against each other in. Yeah, that's coming up right here at 11 o'clock on ESPN. Now, this is a game that's going to get lost on everybody because it's at 2:30, Aaron. And I know we'll be just absolutely submerged in Auburn, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, and even Georgia Tech and Miami. But the more intriguing game for me, it's Ole Miss hosting Vanderbilt. Ole Miss, it's kind of a, for all the people who predicted the SEC, such as myself, it's one of those things where, are you going to be right on who finishes last in the SEC? And this is one of the games that decides it. Vanderbilt on the road at Ole Miss. Ole Miss a 3-point favorite over Vanderbilt. Honestly, I think it should be bigger. Ole Miss is getting the short end of the stick because they've had to play Alabama and Auburn back-to-back weeks. Vanderbilt did play Georgia and Alabama. I think Ole Miss can handle Vanderbilt. Their defense sucks, and Vandy will put up some points. But I don't think Vanderbilt's defense is as good as everybody thought it was at the beginning of the year. Look at Kansas State. Kansas State's not doing what anybody thought they would, so that win is really starting to be diminished. If anybody else had beaten K-State, everybody would have forgotten about it by now. But because Vanderbilt did it, they think it's good. But what do you think? You think Ole Miss blows them out here? I think Vanderbilt's starting to form again as the worst team in the SEC.
It's going to be tough, but I think Ole Miss gets this win. I think they're the more talented team for sure. And, I mean, they showed some – I mean, last week against Auburn, most of the points were in mop-up duty, but I still think that they can get it done, and I think they will at home. So I picked them to win this game. I think it's going to be close, though. I think Vanderbilt's going to play hard, but I don't think that Vanderbilt is going to end up worse than Missouri. That game right there, Vanderbilt Missouri, whenever that is going to determine who's going to finish last in the SEC East.
Yeah, interesting things also developing in Knoxville right now, and Butch Jones needs a win desperately. Excuse me, over South Carolina, but a guy who just kind of squeezed in on the odds. He's a huge, you know, heavy underdog to be the head coach, but he did squeeze in on the odds. John Gruden is at the game today in Knoxville. He had a meeting apparently there yesterday, but he will be at the game today. There's pictures of him with some fans. But thank you guys for listening. That's going to do it for us. Me and Aaron got a road trip to get back home and watch the games today. Thank you for listening to us, and enjoy your football Saturday. This has been Tony Mack and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730-1039 The Ump. We'll see you next Saturday. Thanks for joining us.